Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. This podcast is for you if you have an insane drive to find the truth of things. It's not the good answers that we seek, but the good questions. I interview a range of different guests from many different fields, all with the intention to uncover the simple truths that are hidden in plain sight. Most people don't want to go there. I go there. My guests go there, and you benefit. Please let me know if you enjoy these episodes, and as always, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to the podcast. Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. My guest today is Adam Cohen. He is the founder and CEO of Deepin and is working on a project called Adios, and that's how we first got connected on Twitter, talking about open source AI. And you're building a hardware product for AI, a wearable that's open source, which sounds very interesting. And I've been tracking a lot of people doing it in a closed source manner, and it makes a lot of sense to do it in an open source manner for reasons that I'm sure we'll get into. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Yeah, as you said, it's pronounced Adios, but sounds just right. As for the mission and what we are doing, it's essentially an AI wearable device, a hardware device that you put as a necklace, as a pendant, that is open source first.
Let's go into the history of open source. If you know any of the history of open source, like, I know nothing about it, and I really want to learn more about it, because as we were talking before the show, it's like really, really important that we open source this technology. And so what is the history of open source? I imagine it started in like 1980s or 1990s. Is that true?
Yeah. So the history of open source is basically the history of computers. So from the very beginning, and for science as well. So when we talk about peer-reviewing and sharing science, like, the entire scientific revolution was based on sharing knowledge, and open source just taking it to the next level is actually sharing the code that you are building, the documentation, the how-tos, and things like that. And I think the big leap in open source history is the war, or kind of like the competition between the operation systems that we had around, like, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, between Windows of Microsoft to Apple Macintosh to Linux, which is the open source equivalent of operation system. And this is the example I use most when I'm trying to think about the AI space, about open sourcing in the AI space. Because when it comes to open source in the operation system space, commercially, when it comes to personal computers, I would say Apple and Microsoft won. But when it comes to the entire internet and the digital age as a whole, Linux actually won, because Linux runs on servers, has been and been used probably by like 70% of the internet or something like that is run on Linux. And it's actually, it is open source, but it's actually more secure. So that is the big take of why open source.
Oh man, that's exciting. I'm doing a new podcast series with my dad. My dad was a journalist in the 1980s who basically chronicled the rise of the personal computing industry. And we're both interviewing together on the show people from that history. And Linus Torvald, the creator of Linux, is a target of ours. Nice. And it's very interesting that that's basically the start of the internet. Can you talk more about how the internet and the Linux set is the infrastructure for the internet? Is that an accurate statement? If so?
Yeah, it's basically the infrastructure of the internet. So what it means, most of the things that you are using on the internet, if you're going to Twitter or Amazon or Facebook, everything basically runs on a server somewhere. There is a code that runs somewhere that has all the data of the other users and kind of like generating the content that you are seeing. Most of those servers are running, this code is running on top of Linux. So you don't have an application running on top of Microsoft. You just have the server application running on top of Linux.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting. So the server itself, the client server model is based on Linux. And where does Unix come into play for that?
So Unix is like the predecessor of Linux. So I think, and I might be completely wrong here. I think I would dive into Wikipedia afterwards, but there was Unix that was kind of like a version, something that was created initially, kind of like proof of concept and things like that. And from that, I think it was split mainly into Linux and what it became like the standards of everything, and to actually Mac OS, Macintosh, and all of the Apple's operation system. Oh. So that is why you still have a lot of similarities between Linux and Mac OS when it comes to like the under the hood file system management and things like that. But it's not open source anymore, the Apple version, obviously. And Linux has many versions as well, like thousands of different versions.
Wait.
But by the way,
I want to ask one follow up question. And I want to hear that, by the way. But the Linux, is there a one that is very easy to use, like for non technical people? What's the version that's called?
Yeah. So Linux is mainly used as servers, but it's also a desktop, so you can use it as a regular operation system. The one I would suggest is either probably Ubuntu is the most known one.
Awesome.
So it's a Ubuntu. Ubuntu. I'll put it in the description. I think people would love to use that.
Yep.
It is different. So it's like switching between Windows to Mac and from Mac to Windows. Like people need to readjust themselves to the way the operation system works. But it is actually more secure than Microsoft and Apple Mac OS.
Okay, interesting. It's more secure. And do you think that that's due to the open source nature of it? The fact that it's out there so people can hack on it, meaning that they can test it more?
100%. So few things like why it is more secure is one, you have, let's take Microsoft Windows as an example. Like you might have like 100, 1,000, 2,000 developers working on the different versions of Windows, compared to the thousands, if not like million plus of different people contributing code to the Linux operation system, because it is open source. But you also have incentives from companies. So a lot of companies, Microsoft and even Amazon included, the entire business depending on Linux in some way, because even Microsoft, I'm sure, are using Linux inside their like server services. Amazon AWS is running mostly on Linux, I believe. So their developers that are not open source have the incentives to contribute to the open source underlying operation system. So this is one. And the other one is that I believe, and this is might be a bit more controversial, is the incentives are slightly different when it comes to Microsoft versus the open source community. Because by the end of the day, one of the biggest customers of Microsoft is the US state or other like state affiliated factors.
Yep.
And when a vulnerability is being found by those organizations, they might tell it to Microsoft, they might not tell it to Microsoft. I believe they might have agreement on how and when they share their information. And when you find stuff on Linux, like they people just fix it. It's a gray area and a weird world to live in. But I just rather everything open and shared and globally fixed.
Yeah, and I love that it's more secure. Let's talk about the business model. Well, so there's the business model itself on open source, and I do think that I know that there's what the business model is essentially that programmers can build companies helping people do more open source things. So like GitLab, I believe, is somebody a business that has profited off of the fact that it's open source. And then there's like the Mistral piece to actually get into AI, because so there's the business model and then there's the Mistral piece. Let's focus on the business model first. What are the general ways that people can make a business on open source?
Yeah. So, and I actually get it a lot. Open source does not mean not making money out of the code or out of the product. It is more of ideology and a way to build trust and build a more secure product. Mm-hmm. Many projects throughout the last 50 years have been building open source and making successful commercial products, GitLab included. One model to do that is, I think, what GitLab is doing and Redis is doing is, it's called the open core business model. You basically create a product. It is open source. You can run it yourself. You can deploy it anywhere you want. You cannot build it as a service, so you cannot make money as a user using this product. But the company, what they provide the core functionality open source, but they build a managed solution on top of that.
Yep,
that people can choose to pay them for them to manage their stuff. So in GitLab example, you can run GitLab yourself. I can download GitLab code and run it myself. But I'm lazy. I would rather pay $20 to GitLab to manage everything myself.
Yeah. Okay, that's super interesting. Okay, so let's go into Mistral. Let's go into AI and where we're headed. Is Mistral open source? Because I know Llama, the Facebook Llama, says that they're open source, but there was a lot of disagreement about whether they just used that name open source. And open source must be vast if they're able to do that. Is Mistral truly open source? And what do you think of Mistral?
So first of all, I think they are like doing amazing work. They have released open source models that we can use and build on top and run amazing models locally that we were never able to do before. So definitely open source. They are not entirely open source. So as you said, it's a large umbrella that has a lot of different terms and subterms under the hood. For example, I think today Mistral actually released a new model, and I think it's called Mistral Large, that is not open source. So you cannot download the weights and run it locally yourself.
Oh, interesting.
So they're like, which is a different, by the way, it is a different open source business model. Like you build the core functionality open source, and like the extra features, they are costing money. So this is another way to do that. And another term of open sourcing, so you can open source the weights, and this is what Mistral have been doing. Not for all of the models, but for some models. But even if you release the weights, you don't necessarily release the data as open source, which when it comes to AI, like it's big part of the models. Like if you don't have the data that generated during training these weights,
That's really interesting. I had never heard that before. I knew about the weights, but I didn't realize. I mean, it obviously makes sense that the proprietary data is very, very important. And so there's different, it's like a giant chessboard, which within open source, and that there's various different things that you can do. And then, but it still feels more integrous that Mistral is doing that, even though now they have this large language model. But the idea is that they just open source all the building blocks. And then I'm sure there could be another competitor that eventually comes and does actually open source. So that's my understanding of where we're headed. Is just like the models themselves, once they train them, they're out there, right? And so then there's the training part, but we're gonna get better and better at training. We're gonna need less and less human beings. We're gonna be able to put it on CPUs. Probably the GPU thing might not be a thing that goes off really far into the future. Like I think this whole thing is just gonna flatten to an insane degree, and that new competitors are going to enter, and it's going to be like the chip market too. Like the chip market, you know, was dominated by I guess still is dominated by one thing doing the most advanced things. And that might be open AI. That might just continue to be open AI for a long period of time, but then it will have choice, right? Cause and then if you want to know what's going on, which I think is really important for this technology, cause I don't know about you, I definitely experienced it just today before I was trying to get something done, and what in with ChatGPT, and what would have taken me, you know, one prompt back in March 2023 is now like six or seven different prompts, trying to get around these crazy guardrails that they put onto this thing, and like that's a big problem for me personally, and I'm sure a lot of other people. What do you think about that? All that?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's not only like cool to being able to have it under like the models, the weights. Yep. Like if you build entire business on top of that, like you need to be able to at least take the weights and run it yourself if you want to. But I'm all for Mistral, by the way. I think what they are doing is a good thing. Like we in the open source community, we need to make sure there are the right incentives for them to make money in order for them to continue to release some open source models. So what, and a lot of people actually try to push OpenAI to do that, is to release GPT-3 or GPT-3.5 as open source, and just the like the latest model,
yeah.
the best one will be behind API, so they can benefit from the product and make money out of it. So I think I'm fine with that approach, as long as the next version of Mistral, they will build a better one, and then the current one that is currently not open source will become open source. I, for example, would probably, as a developer, I would probably build my app on top of open source, but use their managed API, because I don't want to build the entire infrastructure to make the inference of the API myself. I would probably just use the managed solution, but it build trust. This kind of business model build trust, and this is what we're trying to do with the Deus as well. And as for OpenAI, I don't think they will necessarily be at the top a few years down the road. I think the open source community, it's not only cool, like people, it's like the entire hive mind of the human mind, like concentrated into fixing it, building this open source. Like you see people building, like taking this model and this model and like combining them together to create a better one. And I think this will make things
It's basically
eventually much better than OpenAI. Yeah.
It's the same thing that's going on in science, I think, is that for the past like 40 years, science has become sort of a shadow of itself because it's become institutionalized in this way that's totally, totally able to be gamed, which is all about social proof. And like, oh, if I just get the right credentials, then everybody will trust me and it'll be perfect. And so that's OpenAI's model. Like, and I like OpenAI. I like a lot of what they're doing. I think they're definitely doing it better than Google's doing it. But like, there's just so many problems with that, the credentialed idea. And they do have a lot of brilliant people. And there's this one, Ian Banks cyberpunk novel, that talks about a civilization that basically integrates with AI. And then, so for most of the decisions out there, it's basically you just trust the AI, but with the human variation and just like brilliant people, that every once in a while you get somebody who can think better than the AI. And so that's what OpenAI's model is that they'll just get all of those people inside of one company that's closed source, incentivize them with money, but in this weird nonprofit way that totally blew up a few months ago. And so that's their model. It's just like, we'll just get the credential geniuses. And what I love about the open source model is that it doesn't matter compared to that hive mind that you're talking about. Like, that hive mind's going to beat them. Yeah.
And there is a lot of talent that is probably one of the best talent out there that is not credential.
Exactly.
Like, that doesn't have credentials.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
the hackers in their garages, in their houses, late at night, they probably can like hack things better than a lot of like ML engineers in OpenAI.
Yeah.
While saying OpenAI engineers are like doing obviously amazing engineering work. So I completely agree with what you were saying. I hope for the open world and with open source models, because as you said, like when, and it will, we will get there. Like we will all going to have personal AIs that make different ones as well, like that help us like make different decisions, that help us even remember and understand ourselves. Like, it's going to be like an extension of our minds in a way that we cannot even think how it's going to affect our psychology, our perception of ourselves, like crazily.
Okay.
If you cannot own your data or like take it elsewhere, like you are basically doomed to be part
a slave.
Of
a
slave,
slave.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
And if not today, the next generation. So.
Okay, very interesting. So let's move into what you're actually building. Because I know that you're building a wearable that's open source, and I think that's really important, because that wearable technology is like, of all the vibes, the creepy vibes that I get from people building technology, the closed source, the wearable ones are like, ooh, that like a device that has that technology, that's listening to everything they say, that I trust that's helping me do all these things in physical space, like that. Plus the fact that we can actually read thoughts now with LLM and MRI technology, those two ones are the most creepy. And so let's talk about what you're building and why it's important.
100%. So let's start with why it's important. In the upcoming world, we are all going to have personal AIs that knows everything about us. They will have access to from our calendar to Gmail to listen and see everything that we see and listen to. And it's going to be there 24 hours 7. It's going to know all about us. It's going to be our best friends. It's going to be our best colleague, and whatnot. It's going to feel like you. Now, the benefits of having such a wonderful tool are enormous, and I believe it will take some time, and I believe like people will adapt to this kind of mentality and will buy those products. Now, the issue with that, and if you're trying to think 10 years ahead, 20 years ahead, 30 years ahead, it's not looking a bit concerning, because even if the current founders, which I believe are trying to build great technology and do great things and have good intentions, if this data, and I think the last 10 years showed us, if this data exists elsewhere that you don't own it, or basically it's not your data, it's going to be used either to manipulate you, or to it can be taken from you. You can like it's not when your personal AI, when you become deplatformed from your own personal AI that is you, it's a lose. It will be like losing an arm or like losing your leg. It's going to be
Your brain,
crazy.
it's going to be losing an exponential accentuator of your brain.
Exactly. So this is like why. So basically, I was seeing all of those products that like people started doing, and like this extension, like this thing that see everything that you see, listening to everything that you are hearing. And I thought, okay, that's pretty cool. It is needed. Let's make sure people have the choice to have it open source. Right? And by open source, I don't, as you can see, if you will see the code right now, it's very technical, and people need to deploy their own like database and things like that. The goal is for the end user, the regular average Joe end user, to be able to use that as well, which might end up being like a managed solution or anything like that. But the idea is that they can always take their data and go elsewhere, or they can deploy it themselves. It is their data, it's their personal AI, and it's not like a cool marketing thing. Like it is crucial for literally our own existence.
Very interesting. Okay. So what is the hardware part of what you're building?
So everything is open source. So like there are different versions of it. So there is a device called Coral AI that you can buy for like around $100. We just recently introduced a Raspberry Pi version, which costs like $20. And we are going to release another version, ESP32, which will cost $10 overall. And it's essentially like a simple microcontroller. It's a simple, let's say, computer with a microphone sitting on your chest. And it has like 100 lines of code that all they do is just running in a loop and listening to the microphone and upload this audio to your own server. So I actually never get this data. It doesn't get into my servers or anything.
Yeah,
You can
beautiful. Yeah.
run your own server, and it processes the data, store it in a database, and then you have an AI on your phone, an app that you it's also open source. You can run your own app if you want to. And you can chat essentially with your personal AI that has all of this context. So if you will ask it, how was the meeting I had yesterday? It will give you a summary, or like it's even its own opinion about the meeting. Or you will ask it what I should buy to my mom for her birthday, and it will somehow fetch from like 2 years ago that she said she always wanted this flower or whatever, and it will be able to fetch it. It's like an extension for your mind.
Brilliant. Okay, so I want to get one. Can with the audio, so can you turn it on and off? Is that on the physical device itself, or do you have to use it through the app to turn it on and
So
off?
currently it is always on.
Always on.
Because I the way I saw it, I thought like the always on is kind of like the
Opt
secret
out.
source of
Yeah, it's
of
rather opt
the
out rather than you want to opt
yeah.
out rather than opt in, or else it's not going to get the most important parts, basically.
Exactly. But by the way, and this is why open source is really cool. Like the open source community that is currently is become like is around this product, a lot of great people contributing to the code. are saying that they want to have this button and they are working on adding it.
Great.
So you can have a button, you can turn it on and off if you want to.
And I just got a great idea. I mean, maybe somebody's already thought about it. I'm sure somebody can actually build something that can turn it off. Like if both of us have a device and I'm in a state of mind that I don't want to be recorded, I can just have my thing emit some sort of sound or Bluetooth signal or something that turns off everyone else's recording. Is that possible?
It is actually came out as an idea.
Yeah.
When I think Tab was like it came out on Twitter and maybe Humane Pin.
Yeah.
And I think it's possible like that. There is some technology to kind of like disable nearby Bluetooth devices and stuff like that. We are currently not doing that. But
yeah.
I think it will be a cool option. I agree that I would love to have a device on me that sometimes cancel things around me so my voice is not being recorded by everyone.
Could be very dangerous too, because it could knock out other technologies, and that might just be a very interesting kind of like black hat white hat in the physical space, just like you having these devices that somehow turn off other devices. Like that's getting into very tricky territory.
I agree. I think it is a tricky territory, and I think there is a lot of like research to do to dive into that. So for example, maybe you can build a technology that you record your voice and then you wear like a device that sends the exact opposite sound voice of your voice to just cancel out your voice from other,
yeah.
Like, you know how like AirPods voice cancellation
yeah.
works? It basically sends like the opposite wave.
Wow.
Maybe you can do the same thing, but just for your voice or something.
Yeah,
I don't
interesting,
know.
Beautiful. So you just never show up. That's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you got the hardware and then you got the software. Your company specifically, is it building, I imagine the hardware because it's a Raspberry Pi. You had mentioned there's three different versions. There's one Core AI. Is that what you said? The more expensive
Coral.
One? Coral.
Yeah, Coral AI, yeah.
Okay, Coral AI. And is that a hardware product?
Yeah, it's all like other products that I didn't build. So I basically bought them on Amazon.
Yep.
You can buy them all on Amazon. I imagine we will get to a place. So those three options are because we as a community are basically trying to figure out the right hardware to settle down on.
Yep.
And I think we will end up settling down on the last one, the ESP32, because it is much cheaper, will have better battery life and things like that. Once we've settled down on the hardware, I'm sure we will like sell directly like the full product as well, but currently just buy them on Amazon.
Yeah, fully integrated product. And this is the beauty of open source. So you can go with where everything is going and then figure it out. And so if I were to go buy ESP32 on Amazon, get it here, although I'm in Argentina, it's gonna be hard to get on Amazon. I wonder if, and I don't have a way to buy online yet here, but I'll go look for something like that. How hard would it be, me being like mildly technical, to actually download everything and get it functioning?
I think you will have the easiest time with the first version, the Core AI version.
Okay, right. Yep. Yep.
At the moment, but I think in about 2 to 3 weeks, if you'll get the last version, it will be so easy to set up that I think everyone will be able to do that with slightly technicality. And even that, the aim is to remove that as well.
Yeah, got it. And so is the business that you're running is basically, it's building the software on top of these hardware things, because the hardware is kind of already figured out basically because you've got these open source devices that just work for it. So you're building the software part of it.
Yeah. So the hardware, like it's really like kind of like Legos. You buy those different components, then you solder them together and try to write a software for that. So it's mainly software. And I think the hardware is a simple hardware. There's nothing really special about it. The magic will come, and the product leap and the user experience will come from both the software and how it like works when retrieving the data, the way it speaks and everything. And second, the way it looks and the way you integrate the appearance to your own appearance. So maybe be able to customize it, or like it is, by the end of the day, you're going to wear it 24 hours, 7. You don't want this ugly box sitting on your chest. You would want it to look something nicely looking. I think
Got it. Yep.
those are two challenges that I see that are not the hardware itself.
Okay, that's super interesting because so then once the thing is already running, then there will be a hardware qu question of how to produce these beautiful objects that have been basically figured out, and then you likely go to China or somewhere like that, and then actually start to
Exactly.
produce them. The only problem with China in terms of that is that is the sort of the state alignment with the manufacturing. And then once you actually start to manufacture things, then you might get a knock on the door, a silent knock, private knock on the door saying, "Hey, let's get that access to that." But is there is yeah, go for it. Is there a way to get around that?
Yeah, so I think that's the magic of open source because by the end of the day, everyone, as long as it stays open source and you see the code being committed to, like it's not, this is the exact point. It's not that you trust me, Adam, that I won't do anything with China. You can see the entire code yourself and decide if you want to. But even if you, and you say, you can say, I'm not technical, how can I tell? Trust the entire, like the millions of people who are using it, while contributing to it, to make sure that there isn't anything suspicious there.
Great. Perfect. It is what we need. And it's so interesting. Can you talk to who are some people who are don't normally get above outside whose names don't get outside of the open source community, that I should interview or that people should be aware of, who are doing good work in this field?
Of AI
Yeah,
specifically.
of AI, open source AI, open source AI.
Open source AI. I mean, obviously there are the entire team that are currently working on Adeus that are doing a pretty cool job. They are like, I think they've wrote more code than I did by now, which is pretty amazing. As for specifics, I think definitely try to with the Mistral guys and the Ollama, the engineering team of Ollama, Ollama, the open source inference company.
Wait, what is this?
It's called Ullama, and they are
Ulama. How do you spell it?
Olama.
Okay.
And they are doing pretty good stuff to help people run models locally in such an easy way. So it's just like downloading an app and run it, and it works, and it's pretty like amazing. So I would definitely talk to those guys as well.
Very cool. Okay, I'll reach out to them. We've been talking a lot about technology. We've been talking a lot about AI. I feel like I've got a very good understanding of what you're building, and I really appreciate what you're building. And so let's talk about like philosophy or like how you got into this. Like why are you so passionate about the open source side?
So, as a software engineer, which I am, like you basically, the smallest app that you want to build, no matter how small it is, it will probably be depending on this massive open source community that has existed for like so many years. Your job, whether it is the server that you're using that is Linux, to the Android, which is also open source, to the different packages, the small ones that just do the exact thing that you were looking for. And I appreciate it. I contributed to different projects throughout the past few years, because it is the backbone of the internet. It is modern democracy in its finest form, better than voting.
Ooh,
Like
I like
it's
that.
basically building. And I want to be part of it. I think it's important to be part of it. I have my concerns when it comes to AI. One, obviously, from closed source models of not being able to build
To
the things I
know.
want to build. To data. So to data. So the to being able to, basically live in a 1984 kind of world. It actually scares me. And it will come from private enterprise and from governments as well. Unless we open source community will fight and do great things together, and it requires people to build stuff. And I like building stuff, so it's connects. Really nice.
It's the most important freedom fighting that is going on in the world right now, which is building open source for AI. Like, that is the most important thing that anybody can work on right now. There's some really cool stuff that people can work on in terms of deep tech and all these things, and really interesting, but the most important thing right now. And I love it because it's not about fighting anybody. It's not about fighting evil. It's just about building what's good rather than fighting something, which, like, and I have no problem with fighting, but it's like it's like you're just never gonna defeat evil by fighting it. So
I think you definitely also like focus on building open source, but you need to advocate openly of the importance of it. And a lot of great big names out there have been putting their names on it and kind of like pushing to other peoples in the area to remain and build stuff open source, to go to the regulators and push back on their suggestions. Criticizing open AI and what they've been the full
That's a good
promising
point.
of, and
That's a good
it's so
point.
important. Like it is an actual fighting. You see people fighting on Twitter, in real life, in rooms of the government, and it's important. And this philosophy, it is really the essence of, in my opinion, of democracy. As I said, it's in the most purest form that can be. The criticism of it, I think it's very important to mention as well, is that the fear of this critical technology to be used by malicious actors. And it is true, it is a concern, but I think open source has shown us that it is rather having it open source and having all of its issues openly sourced and shared and globally fixed than having it not known. This is one. And second, I believe in humans and the fact that they are good. When we talk about the global world, having it like entirely open source will make sure like it has been used good rather than like a group of a few people who make the decisions. I think this kind of arrangement actually brings out the worst of humans. So when you have a concentrated power somewhere, it even if not at first, so open up, I think OpenAI and the people there are truly amazing and want to do good. But this kind of organization and the way it is structured will bring bureaucracy and kind of like middleman management and end up being used wrongly. Not if not now, in 30 years or 40 years. This is how
Everything, everything ends up there. That's like the past 400 years of large bureaucracies and administration says that everything collapses, and when it collapses, you don't want to be anywhere near it, and also you don't want them to own you. And right now we're getting into a situation where we're repeating the last 10 years, which, like, if anybody's been paying attention, you don't want to repeat the last 10 years when it comes to centralized corporations. Like, it's not a really fun way to do it.
And it will be 100 times more painful and critical in the age of AI because it won't be your social network handler. It's going to be the way you perceive yourself as human.
Yeah, your exocortex, like, it's just gonna be, it's
Yeah.
that's gonna be so nuts. Do you know anything about venture capital as it relates to open source? Do you know anything about how, like, because it's not something you really hear VCs talking about when they're talking about their investment thesis, is like specifically focusing on open source technologies. I'm sure there are VCs who do that, but I've never heard of them. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, so there is a venture capital in that space because again, a lot of great and good companies have been built open source. It's called the entire venture capital scene of that space called COSS, which is a commercial open source software. I think you have a few VCs that is what they do entirely. They don't invest in a non-open source projects, and obviously, there are investors who will invest. In everything. And by the way, like another great example, by the way, of open source in the AI space, which I will highly recommend trying to reach out to, is Imad and Stability AI team. They've been doing the stable diffusion models. And one, they are doing amazing stuff for the community. And two, they are in the process of figuring out how to commercialize their product, their model. So they started with ideology. We want to do open source because it's important and it will be better product. And slowly they are now trying to figure out, okay, maybe we should license it to people who are making more than $1 million on top of our models. Maybe they can give us a piece, kind of vibe, which is totally fine. Like the open source community need to find a way to incentivize this kind of businesses.
Very cool. Very cool. And okay, so we got Raspberry Pi. What's the most we got about 10 minutes left. What's the most kind of sci-fi thing? Like, I've had a bunch over the past couple of months where it's just like, oh man, science fiction's gonna get really close soon. What's the kind of most emotional experience you had in the last couple of months in relation to this technology?
I think one is a recent one actually is the Sora model that AI released, OpenAI released. It is amazing. Like you see that, and it's potential of potential products that you can build with it. Amazing. From customized movies to reduce the barrier to create movies. I have friends who are currently studying filmmaking, and I'm telling them, like, guys, it's going to be amazing for you guys. You can sit in your home and build a whole movie from scratch, your idea to production. Amazing. So one, and second, its quality kind of like making you question everything that you know of reality. If it is that good from like a prompt, the chances we are not living in a simulation, it's really small now. So this is one, I think. And the second one is the baby AGI that was released by Yohai,
Oh.
which is a VC, which I actually also recommend talking to him when
Yeah.
it comes to open source and AI. He's a really awesome dude. And when he released this baby AGI project, just a lot of ideas kind of like sparked in my mind. Okay, I can do that, I can do that. It's kind of like took the LLM because I've been using LLMs for like 3 4 years now, GPT-3, GPT-2. And I was doing a lot of maybe basic machine learning stuff with them and some maybe better chats. And even ChatGPT didn't like was a big leap in my mind because I was using GPT-3 for a long time. But seeing the way you use it as in an iterative way to obtain a goal and use tools, this was really amazing.
Yeah, interesting.
You start seeing how language becomes action in the real world.
Very beautiful. And will too. Yeah, because it's there's the will, then there's language, then there's the action. I'm sure they're all mixed up in there together, but
Yeah.
and then extending our will into these machines. Let's last few minutes or so, let's talk about the agents and the autonomous agents. What's your definition of an autonomous agent? And how close are we there from those?
So I think autonomous agent is basically a code that you can give it a task and it achieves the task. That's the simplest definition I think I can think of. And I think we are there already. Like I think we've been there before. Like I think we had autonomous agents in a sense with previous AI models or just pure code.
Oh,
But
interesting.
now we just easier to build them, one, and second, they are just way more capable. I've been building agents for the past year. I've been
Okay.
building agents in the writing code aspect. I've been a building agents around like gaming, kind of like
Oh.
letting an AI like
Go play the game. Yeah.
play the game or and let me interact with it.
Yeah.
And recently, I've been building an agent in the space of finding like vulnerabilities in code.
Oh,
And
nice.
trying to white hack bounty them. And it's just really cool to see because it is already very much capable in those specific tasks that I like build agents for. I think there was still a lot of need for human intervention. Well, and by that I mean not like telling the agent what to do, but let it do whatever it wants, and then it gives you a report or kind of like a verification, confirmation, and you kind of like play more like a manager role. And sometimes it it's really shit.
Yeah,
Like, it
got
gives
it.
you,
Yeah,
like,
interesting. Yeah.
and I think we are already in this world for me for many things.
And so if me being, just get I'm getting AI to teach me how to program right now, it's really interesting. The learning curve is significantly decreased because of this. So I'm just learning HTML, CSS, JavaScript, all in React. And then, I want to start doing some Python stuff so I can understand what backend really means. And then there's this other just kind of looming, almost like guillotine type of thing about like, oh, but what happens if I can start programming using AI, using the OpenAI API, using the Mistral API, and then agent. So can you let me know, like, what is the most simple thing that I can build an agent for so that I can start to learn about agents? Like, what's the easiest, simplest task that I should have it do?
Probably just kind of like do an online research for
Okay,
you. Meaning,
interesting.
I want to write the task will be I want to write a report about this market. Go and try to do that for me. And then to build this agent, it will need a few different tools that I think are simple enough to build. One is like a Google search tool, so it can like search queries
Got it. Yeah.
in Google, fetch website. Write summary and things like that. It will probably end up being mo not more than like 100 lines of Python code.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
And
It's all in Python. Yeah.
just use
So in
OpenAI
Python.
API directly.
Yeah.
OpenAI API with their function calling, it's called.
Function coding. Interesting. Okay.
Function calling.
Function calling. And that was the big thing that Mistral released today, is that they talked about that you can actually call functions using the Mistral with a large LLM, right? Okay.
So this is exactly like how AI agents work. So you basically tell it you're an AI agent. These are the functions that you can call to try
Yeah.
to achieve the following objective. And then the
Oh.
return of the agent is like call this function. And you in your program, you basically take what it
Yeah,
asks you
got
to
it.
do and you're actually executing it. So if it's a search, you will just execute the search in the real code and give the output back. And it kind of like closes a loop between the AI, the language model that generates like language to real world in interfaces, which is functions, which are functions.
Yeah, it's so sci-fi. It's so science fiction. And it's so weird because I think it just took this step that nobody was thinking about, which is that it's all about our language, like the large language models. Everybody thought self AI was all about self-driving cars and the robots that are going to kill ourselves. But what it's already done is just taken over our entire abstract reasoning thing. And it is like vastly improved it, which is going to get so weird. Yeah.
I, by the way, I'm a big believer this is like amplification tool.
Amplification. Yeah.
So I'm like a lot of people, I used to be like a team lead of a few engineers, and they were like kind of like worried about being replaced by AI because AI is basically really cool, really good writing code. And I think recently NVIDIA CEO kind of like said, don't teach kids to code. I don't believe in that. I'm using those tools every day, all day. And I think this is the most amazing time to know how to code and to learn how to code as well, because as you said, you can learn how to code fairly quickly compared to like a year, 5 years ago, which is amazing. And you can build so many things so easily, and it's more like I think it's the same as filmmaking. It won't replace filmmaking. It will just enable you to do much more with much less, and definitely learn to code. This is the right time.
Yeah, it's the right time. Thank you so much for coming on the show. How can people find out more about you and find out more about what you're working on?
Just on Twitter, following me on Twitter, Adam Cornilel, and I'm sure I'll put it on the notes after the podcast. And feel free to reach out to me as well on DMs. I'm happy to discuss the things
Cool.
I do. And yeah, love to talk to you as well.
Yep. And if you guys want to go check out wearables, definitely go get in Coral AI ESP32 or the Raspberry Pi and go start playing around with it. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Stuart Alsop III. Also, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or iTunes for every weekly episode that I publish on Monday mornings. Hope you have a great day.